It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Back with us again is Republican New York State Assembly Minority Leader William Will Barclay. He's from the 120th District. Well, Leader Barclay, it's really good to have you back with us after the election.
I said, I think I'm pleased the election's over, but I know I'm not alone, as all Americans probably are happy that we've now passed the election time. No more commercials on television, no more radio ads. Now we can get back to focusing on governing and trying to push good government policy.
Well, before we get into your thoughts on the election, obviously, and its impact here in New York State, I want to start with some news that's been breaking and will fully break around midday today, Thursday, November 14th. We're speaking before the official announcement, but word came down, and it's in the calendar, that the governor is going to reintroduce her congestion pricing plan, something I know you and the minority and even many Democrats are not supportive of. The original plan would have taxed vehicles going below 60th Street in Manhattan $15. The reports out of the New York Times is that she's going to propose $9 toll there and bring the plan back. What are your thoughts about this news?
Well, first of all, we oppose any congestion plan, whether it's a $15 one or it's $9 one. I think it's a wrong direction for New York. You know, one of the big issues, now getting right back on election, was the cost of living. And one of the reasons Donald Trump, I believe, became president was because he was able to effectively argue that the Biden administration policies were causing people to not be able to afford, you know, basic things like food, housing, and heating. And I think that was a very effective argument for him. So the fact now that the governor, right after the election, is now going back to increase tolls or put tolls on average New Yorkers seems amazing to me. I don't think the lesson was learned. And actually, what changed for the time when she proposed and then withdrew it, and now is putting it back out, what changed? Well, we had elections. Clearly, she realized before the election this was not a politically popular issue to be supporting. So she pulled it back, and now after the election, she's putting it back out there. What happened to her concern that she said when she initially withdrew it about the little guy and having the little guy be able to afford this? I don't know what's changed with that. Well, the only thing I think the election's over, and we have a new president-elect. So, you know, I think it's going to be a very hard sell for her politically to get this done. I think there's multiple groups, bipartisan groups, that are opposed to it. And really the problem I have alternately with this, David, is the fact that the MTA is really a bloated bureaucracy. And just to there was a study done just to construct a mile of subway. You know, they're talking about the Second Avenue subway doing that. It's something like $4 billion for the MTA to do it. But anywhere else, it's, on average, they can do a mile of track for about $350 million. So I think it's time, instead of trying to start a new program to raise revenue from the MTA, it's time to look internally at the MTA, see where the inefficiencies that there must be god-awful inefficiencies in that bureaucracy, and look at that instead of trying just to create a new program that's going to end up costing the average New Yorkers money.
Well, obviously, with the majorities of Democrats in the legislature, you don't see them actually doing that, do you? Or even in New York City?
Well, again, it's now hard because the election's over. But clearly, there was a lot of pressure not to go through with this program initially because they knew how politically unpopular it was. And just because the election is over doesn't mean we're not going to have an election in 2 years, particularly for governor. So I do think there is some political liability of trying to push this through. And hopefully, you're right. You're right. It's going to be difficult to stop it in the legislature. They're the ones that passed it in the first place. But yeah, with the outcry being as loud as it has been, maybe there is some political pressure and maybe we can get it taken out. But who knows? We're going to do everything we can, at least in our conference, to voice our concerns about this and make sure that New Yorkers know what's being proposed.
And I can only imagine that once it's announced, President-elect Donald Trump will make his disagreements known.
Yeah, I can't speak intelligently on exactly what power the president has over this. I know he's expressed his opposition to it, so I suspect with any type of project involving, you know, transportation, the federal government has some say in it. Whether he can deep six it or not, I guess I'm not completely sure, but I appreciate at least his opposition to it, even if this can be vocal opposition. But we'll see. I'm sure we'll hear more about what he can or cannot do in order to prevent this program from going into place.
All right. Well, obviously the elections and the impact on New York is the real story here this week. We're speaking with William Barclay, the minority leader in the state assembly, a Republican, of course, and Donald Trump has now been reelected president of the United States. And that has a ripple effect across the country. And here in New York, we see Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, the Republican from the 21st District, tapped as U.S. ambassador, and former Long Island Congressman Lee Zeldin, who's run for governor in New York, will lead the Environmental Protection Agency. Let's get your initial reaction to these appointments.
Well, I think those are great. I know Elise has been close. Congresswoman Stefanik's been close with Trump. She's been on a meteoric rise in her political career, and I think she'll be a great UN ambassador. She's certainly someone that's very outspoken, and I think she matches up well, if I understand it correctly, with Trump's foreign policy goals. So I think that's great, and anytime you see a New Yorker get promoted into such a spot, I think it's great. And of course, Lee Zeldin, who ran a close race against Hochul for governor and has been a congressman, I think he'll be a great EPA administrator. So I think that is great. Those are two cabinet posts. So, it's good to see New York getting some recognition and getting some high profile positions in the Trump administration.
You know, I don't want to make this sound like it's not part of what any politician would consider, which is loyalty. But certainly these two picks have been very, very loyal to Donald Trump. And when it comes to Congressman Zeldin, the former Long Island congressman does not have a great record on the environment. And when it comes to the EPA, he didn't even mention the word environment when he was talking about it. He started talking about, basically deregulation and, working with business. And while I understand that that's his position, when it comes to the agency, aren't we supposed to be protecting the environment?
Well, I think that's always a matter of perspective. And I've said a lot, sometimes there's not a balance, and you need to bring back sort of a balance between what the environmentalists think they have to do and what the business community needs to do. But putting that aside, I think even more importantly for both Stefanik and Zeldin, the fact that they're outsiders, probably more with Zeldin. So I think hopefully he can maybe go into the agency and make it more efficient, make it more balanced. We see it here in New York State, for instance, not to get local, but the environmental laws make it very, very difficult to do business in New York State. And you look at the massive project in Central New York, the Micron project, and the reason it's been delayed, and people are very nervous of whether this is actually going to get a shovel in the ground and happen, is because New York environmental laws require so much oversight of making these projects that it's been delayed until now in 2026, I think, even when they're going to put a shovel in the ground. So that's the type of thing that I hope Lee, and I'm sure he can do it, provide some leadership to bring just some balance back into these agencies. I wouldn't look at his environmental record because the people that put out those are environmental groups. And then, of course, if you're not doing every type of environmental regulation out there, they're not going to be happy with you.
Yeah, and I understand the side of it that you're coming from for sure. But one of the problems we've had, if we put aside this idea of over-regulation for a second, and let's just take an example of pollution. Good old pollution. There's a dump somewhere. It's going to leach into the groundwater system. We don't want that. Nobody wants that, right?
Right.
But we're going to need people on the ground to be able to clean that up. But even before that, we need inspectors to know that that's happened. And when you start cutting from agencies, usually what happens is enforcement, because enforcement's usually light anyway. We pass a lot of unfunded mandates. A lot of agencies are tasked with doing a lot of things, and they don't have enough people. So what I'm worried about is when you start to sort of, quote, clear the waste away, we're going to lose valuable people that can identify problems out in the environment.
Yeah, well, that's not an unreasonable concern, but hopefully they're a little more surgical in that, because I think your point is well taken, that no one wants to pollute the environment, at least no one I've met. And so there's always just shades of gray on these things. Some things are just not black and white. And unfortunately, I just think that the the scales are pushed one way and then need to be brought back. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a very legitimate reason. Our purpose of government is to make sure no one's polluting and to have the enforcement there. So I think it'll be more surgical. Lee's a very capable person, and I'm sure he doesn't want to see, you know, pollution causing problems. I think it's just those gray areas where maybe the scales have balanced one way or the other way. Hopefully he can rebalance that to make it better and more commonsensical, frankly.
Well, either way, we're going to see, aren't we?
We are.
All right. Well, listen, Will Barkley, let's talk about who should run for the Stefanik seat now, right? We hear about guys like Phil Steck, the sticker mule guy. What's his name? Oh, Anthony Constantino. You know, what are we hearing?
Well, we got, in my conference, we have Colonel Smullen, Robert Smullen from Fulton County.
That's right.
Chris Tagg have thrown their names or have been mentioned as people that may be able to do it. I think either of those guys are very capable. They make great Congress representatives. And so we'll see. It's going to be a special, as you're aware of. So the county chairs from both parties get to decide on a weighted vote basis of who will do it. And I imagine Congresswoman Stefanik will have a say in it, too. And I imagine President Trump will have a say in it. So we'll see. She's got to, obviously, she's been nominated. She's got to be confirmed by the Senate. I suspect that would be January, February, and then the governor has to call a special. So there's going to be a little time yet to do it, but it certainly makes for good political fodder. It's really enjoyable, the different scenarios out there looking at it. But either one in my mind, whether it's Colonel Smullen or Chris Tagg, either one of those guys would be great, although there'd be a loss to me and our conference and the assembly.
Well, I apologize in advance for asking this. I have to ask you this. We'll get back to New York State directly. But the news came that Donald Trump has nominated Matt Gaetz for Attorney General. And that, you know, even some moderate Republicans have reacted kind of like, huh?
Right. Well, that will be, again, you know, all this has big consequences for policy. So I don't want to make light of it, but it is also being a political animal, it's enjoyable to see how some of these appointees will move forward. Obviously, we have a new Senate majority leader just yesterday, too. And it'll be interesting how he's able to balance maybe some of
John Thune.
The Trump. Yeah, John Thune. You know, he's got to balance the wants and needs of the institution and his members in the Senate against, you know, the agenda of Trump. And for the most part, I think they're probably aligned, but there are going to be times when there's different agenda items as priorities. And certainly Matt Gaetz, I think, would fit in that latter category. So we'll see. It would be interesting. I mean, one thing I think that Trump's after, obviously, has been a love lost to the Justice Department. And I do think there's legitimate claims that there has been political prosecution. And so I think that's what the president was getting at with Matt Gaetz, because I think Matt Gaetz is the type of guy that isn't going to take any prisoners and is willing to do whatever it takes to try to reform the Justice Department. But if I was the U.S. senator, I just want to know, I'd certainly be questioning him strongly on, you know, what would be his plans and what to, you know, reform can take a very wide meaning. And, you know, what exactly is that? Because clearly, I think they've made some political judgments at the Justice Department, I think, are very unfortunate, that undermines their overall purpose. But ultimately, the Justice Department is a crucial agency, and I wouldn't want to see it, you know, its overall mission be, you know, jeopardized by too fast a reaction or too extreme of a reaction.
Couldn't it also be jeopardized by too much loyalty to the president himself? I mean, isn't that why he's picking these people? Because they're so loyal to him? And don't we need to be a little concerned because the attorney general needs to be independent of?
Well, he's still an agency head, and the president still has the ability to fire them.
True.
I would say, you know, you're right. Loyalty is important, but outsiders, I think, are awesome. I think that's more the story here versus whether loyal to Trump. I mean, I think any ones appointed by the president to a cabinet level position is going to be loyal to the person that appoints them. But I think the more interesting story, these are truly outside, you know, outsiders, relative term, but
yeah,
they're truly people that they're not from the Justice Department or former attorney generals or, you know, former administrators of the EPA, et cetera. So I think that's I think that's more of an interesting story, maybe more of the story versus the loyalty to Trump.
Yeah. Well, now, of course, we know that the House is gone Republican. You sort of had on the Democratic side, Nancy Pelosi, the former House Speaker, criticizing Governor Hochul the last time when the House made gains because of losses in New York. Didn't do as well this time. For example, Mark Molinaro conceded to Josh Riley in the 19th district. But when you look at overall voting in New York State, it's become more red. What do you make of the within state contests and Republicans? How did they fare?
Well, I wouldn't say it was a great election for Republicans in New York. We lost, obviously, three congressional seats. The Senate did pick up a seat. The state Senate picked up a seat. We ended up down one seat, unfortunately. But I can go through each of those races and give you my theory of why that happened. But overall, I think one reason I'm, as a Republican, I'm pleased is because the issues that we've been harping on, David, for the last 2 years, as you know, every time you interview me, I think I've raised up the same issues: cost of living, crime, and the migrant crisis. And when it comes to that, I just noticed in the races that we ran against the Democrats, amazingly, David, they were basically running on our issue. They basically said we need to, secure the border. We have to get our arms around the migrant crisis. Crime is out of control in New York. We have to be less soft on crime. And the cost of living is, they're literally Democrats in the congressional races, Senate races, or assembly races. We're essentially running on those issues. And so I guess I'm heartened on that, and hopefully that carries through. I'm a political realist to know that doesn't always happen, but carries through so we can see some changes in Albany to address, these concerns. And if we don't address them, we're just going to keep digging ourselves in a bigger hole, and we're seeing that as a result of demographics changes and people leaving New York in droves. And until those issues are solved, we're going to continue to see that. And again, just tying it back to congestion pricing, it doesn't seem like the governor's learned that lesson, unfortunately.
Well, and what other issues besides those that you just mentioned that I believe you'll continue to harp on in the coming session are you looking at?
Well, a lot of things. I think the CLCPA, that's the environmental rules that they put in that I think are very, stringent and unworkable. And very expensive. It's transitioning over to non-emitting electrical generation, I think that's going to be another sticker shock for New Yorkers as we try to institute some of these things. And they're really, really expensive programs. It's like offshore winds and the billions and billions of dollars that someone's going to have to pay for. And that's what the governor and the majorities in the legislature are going to stick it to. Our electrical bills are going to see it on your bills. The electric school bus transition, I can't remember exactly now, but how much that is, but it's like in the billions and billions of dollars. So this is where I think common sense, we have to back up a little bit, look at this and say, what are we accomplishing by putting these programs in place when New York only emits 0.4% of all global emissions? We could be wholly successful in getting this done, but the cost is so extreme, is it really worth the cost benefit of undertaking this? And I think those are real questions. But I think reality, hopefully, I've said this in a whole host of policies put forth by the majority, I hope reality sets in and people realize that maybe isn't the best from a cost benefit basis to institute.
Yeah, well, I just want to point out one other reality, too. Will Barkley, Minority Leader of the State Assembly, on this week's Capital Connection, and I thank you for being here, that there are areas that we haven't seen before on fire. There are wildfires all around us in the Capital District of New York right now. We were breathing in smoke again last weekend. That's very strange when you've never experienced something like that. And you know that part of this is the climate and its shift as we dry out areas and lack of water and droughts. And now even one firefighter was killed when a tree fell on the person. Yeah. So there are real consequences when we don't and haven't up to this point done enough to try to mitigate climate change.
Well, again, I think there's a lot of assumptions being made there. And so is climate change happening? I believe it is happening. But is it caused by everything that we're doing in New York State? And if we change that, is that going to change the direction of climate change. That's really my point. We're looking at spending, when I say billions, I'm talking hundreds, $200, $300 billion of money. And even, as I said, even if we're 100% successful in doing this, is it going to solve the issue of climate change in global? When China, India, everything else, they're building more and more plants, they're emitting more and more CO2. So the question is, maybe we have to pull back, relook at this, and see what the benefit of the stuff that we're doing instead of running headlong into this and going to end up causing, you know, tremendous expense for the taxpayers in New York State.
Well, I certainly think most taxpayers in New York State won't understand it enough and will not want their bills raised no matter what. So I think you got your pulse on that for sure. Well, let's just talk about one more thing in the election, and that's the ballot proposal. Obviously, Proposition 1, Republicans heavily lobbied against it, and it did pass overwhelmingly in New York. And, you know, this was one of the other major issues in the campaign, I think, that was on the Republican side. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I wasn't surprised that it passed. I think the idea that it was enshrining abortion rights into the state constitution, I think the Democrats successfully sold it as that measure. And I think generally, if that was simply what was happening, maybe the opposition for the Republicans wouldn't have been as strong as it was. Our concern, of course, is it enshrines a lot of other things under that, like potentially protecting the right of males to play in female sports. We'll have to see what the outcome is of that. I mean, it's going to be up to the courts to interpret what's been meant. I would say the language in that constitutional amendment was so broad that there's going to be a lot of different interpretations coming out of it. The problem, of course, is when it's in the Constitution. It's in the Constitution. It's not subject to legislation.
Yeah, and from what I've read, no matter what they added in there, that it's already protected under the law.
True.
It's already in
the law. But then, well, I think that's even up to some interpretation. But even it's assuming that's true, the legislature could always come back and change the law and maybe push back against those streams. Now it's in the Constitution. Obviously, to amend the Constitution is a much, much more substantial undertaking. So it would, you know, that's my concern. And the courts certainly in New York have swung very far to the left in their interpretation of this. I imagine these protections, so-called protections in there, are going to be very the backdrop of Roe versus Wade being overturned and the general concern about abortion rights, you know, throughout the country. I wasn't surprised. I thought that was an uphill battle to try to defeat that amendment because the way it was being packaged and sold, I think probably the majority of New Yorkers wanted to see abortion rights enshrined in the Constitution.
Will Barclay, I know that you're going to chuckle at this question. When I asked it to David Lombardo, who I know you know, the host of the Capital Press Room for WCNY, he laughed as soon as I said it, but I'm going to ask it to you. Look, Trump won. Not only that, you got the Senate and the House. You can argue you got a mandate. Is that going to influence any of your New York State majority into getting to negotiate with you on anything? Are they going to see any tea leaves here, or will the New York State legislature, the majority, you know, Andrea Stewart Cousins and Carl Heastie and Governor Hochul, are they going to say, hey, you know what, Will Barclay? You know what, Robert Ort? Come on in. Let's have some real conversations. Let's work together for New York.
Well, that's a great question, David. I'll say this. I think for the more left of those of the party, and you've seen them, some say we have to go back to Albany. We have to Trump-proof New York State. They're, you know, well, frankly, Tish James and the governor, right after Trump was elected, right out there saying we're not going to let his policies affect New York State. From a political perspective, I think that will only benefit us. Because, again, I get back to those issues that Trump won on, and it shows, exit polls show that people are concerned about the cost of living, et cetera, crime, migrants, et cetera. They haven't offered solutions. In fact, I think they've made things worse. So from a political perspective, I don't think they've learned, and I think that will only benefit Republicans in the long run. From a policy perspective, I think it's unfortunate because, again, we can't continue the trajectory the state's been on, unfortunately. We are trying to change that, and you know, I just hope maybe more moderates in the Democrat Party understand that and we can work with them.
He is Will Barclay, the New York State Republican Assembly Minority Leader. Will, I can't thank you enough for getting on the air with me and talking about these important issues and doing it in a constructive, civil way. It's the best way we can practice our politics and political discussion. So thank you very much. We'll talk again.
Thank you, David. I always love being on your show.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.